Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and this week we have a number of people that are involved in wellness on one level or another. And today we have a gentleman who, because of a very, very strong personal situation that he experienced with a member of his family, decided to embark upon a journey that would take him through studies, involved research, going through archives of information to put together a book that is really quite thought-provoking. Its title is Whisper of the Serpent, and it is by James Henderson Esquire. And James has accomplished something with this book that I don't think many people have really even considered doing because of the amount of time that it would take to do it. It's research, and we're going to be touching on some points regarding the history of medicine, science, what has caused challenges. So I want to welcome to the Donna Sebo Show James Henderson. And I want to compliment you on the fact that you had such a commitment and such a level of dedication, James, to what you've done. And I hope you don't mind me calling you James.
No, that is really okay, Donna, if you don't mind me calling you Donna.
Oh, heavens no, not at all. I don't mind at all. I'm really wanting you to share your story, though, of what caused you to embark on this level of research into history, the background of science and medicine. I mean, this took a lot of research.
It did indeed.
What was it?
And it did indeed take a long time. But what triggered for me to follow this path was the death of my wife's father in 1996. I had practiced personal injury law and some medical malpractice for about 25 years, and I thought medical science could do anything. I'd seen them patch up my mangled clients and bring them back to life. But when my father-in-law, Bill Adams, was diagnosed with leukemia, and he died 6 weeks later, and doctors said, they're sorry, there was nothing we can do for you, I was just stunned. Because I thought modern science had just failed our family. And so I embarked on a quest to discover why modern medicine was not having success with chronic degenerative diseases, that it was having in other fields, infectious diseases, trauma, emergency medicine, and so on. I then began to read, and I read over 200 books. And,
Okay.
All credit, Donna, to Sir Francis Bacon in his advancement of learning and his New World Order. He mentioned two facts that pointed me in the right direction. Number one, he made a statement that as he tried to take the world out of Dark Age thinking, he said that it was the foul breath of the serpent that had confounded knowledge. So that was a new light for me. So I went back to the fall of man in the Garden of Eden and began to study the interaction between the serpent and Eve to discover what Sir Francis Bacon meant. And we can go into that further. The other thought was that he said that Pythagoras and Plato had corrupted medicine and science by their theology and Aristotle by his logic. And that then put me on a solid path to discovering why medicine has failed. And in brief, Donna, it is, if your science is false, your medicine will be false.
That's a very interesting statement. If your science is cold, your medicine will be cold or cold. I wanted to quote from the very first part of your book, and you have, your book is divided up into sections. First one is appeal to public opinion. The second one is the whisper, how a false theory of knowledge destroyed ancient and modern science and medicine. And then also another section, how we lost medical freedom, the control of medicine by the petrochemical industry in alliance with big government. Now, each of these sections, you have so much interesting information. And as with anything, then the research, and you're compiling all of these details, and you've got this very, very carefully listed. You document everything through this. But I want to take a little bit out of each segment in the time that we have together. And I'd like my listeners to be aware of you, of the statement right in the very beginning of your book. You say, today our nation faces a healthcare cost crisis that parallels the epidemics of chronic degenerative diseases sweeping across our land and undermining the health and productivity of its citizens. We spend over $2.5 trillion, that's with a T, ladies and gentlemen, $2.5 trillion annually on healthcare, far more than leading European nations, yet we have twice as much chronic disease. Within a few years, our healthcare costs are expected to rise to $4.2 trillion, or 20% of the gross national product. And while we do have the best emergency and trauma care in the world, our chronic disease medicine is not working and is bankrupting us. And you go on with some other statements that I know for a fact is very, very real. This is something that has been stated by so many people in the industry, in the medical industry, that saying we must change. We've got to look at things differently. And the positioning of the medical industry going through a major collapse economically is looming right in front of us. And you make a statement, if we don't move to the prevention and cure model of health care, we're not going to resolve the health care crisis. You have so many very good points that you bring out. And I've always had to chuckle to myself when people have talked about how there are hospitals closing, the economics of things have to be done differently. And I go, there's always going to be sick people. There's always going to be emergency care that's needed. This is just a factor of life. But the way things have been done have absolutely contributed a great deal to much of what we're experiencing in medical diagnoses. So it's as if we are having to go through what I call a purging process. And I think it's healthy. I think it's necessary. And I think that it's up to us as individuals to be more assertive in our own positionings of care and to be more proactive about ourselves. You say we've virtually lost our medical freedom, which I find to be very, very true on so many levels. And I've had members of family affected by this. So your one paragraph in your book, and I'm going to quote this exactly, our medical destiny as individuals and members of the public forum depend on what, if any, action we take. Information is power, and that power can emancipate us if we act on it. And
yes,
that,
Donna,
is very important.
Yes. John Robbins, who was heir to the Baskin-Robbins Ice Cream Foundation, he said we need to take back our health, and that's the creed. That's what we can do. And how that relates to the first quotation you presented to the public is that, yes, there will always be sick people, but that would represent a fraction of healthcare costs. What generates the healthcare costs is the model of medicine we pursue. We manage the symptoms of chronic degenerative diseases for price, Donna. We keep the patient sick. Drugs never, ever cure the underlying chronic diseases. It is only a change of the lifestyle, removing the causes of these diseases, that would end the symptoms. But modern medicine is not interested in the causes, because the money is in the medicine, Donna, not in the cure.
Two-thirds, that is so true.
That $2.5 trillion we spend in healthcare costs all go to just managing chronic degenerative diseases. And many world-class physicians say this, like Dr. McDougall and Dr. T. Colin Campbell and Dr. Andrew Weil. They all point out that it is the management of diseases that has become a national scandal, and that is where our healthcare cost crisis is generated.
You have a section about how medicine is about big business, which I agree. I agree with. You just watch the ads on television, and you get
Correct.
A very clear picture of that. And not the health. And that's where I feel like our personal responsibilities as individuals is to be open to educating ourselves and to be being awakened to the reality that we can do a lot for ourselves. We may not be able to do everything, depending on what situations happen to us and what evolves. But we can be more decisive about what we do with our lives. You see, the first fallacy is that in the area of medicine, it downplays the connection between diet and disease. The second fallacy is that chronic degenerative diseases are incurable. And boy, that is something that we really have to get a mental grip in. And then you go into discussing how physicians many times are caught between a rock and a hard spot because they are having to make a living, and yet their own industry basically is not encouraging them to work differently, to look at people and saying, I want you to be well. I don't want you to have to come in to see me every single month. I really don't want you to do this.
Physicians have lost control of their medicine. They did that about 100 years ago, Donna, when the pharmaceutical industry, by their manufacture of medicines and by their financial control, took over medicine. Physicians are taught only what they know, and that is drugs and surgery in the medical schools. The medical schools 100 years ago was purged of all curricula that taught that disease was the result of your lifestyle, what you ate and drank, and how you lived, and it can be cured by conforming to the laws of health. Those ideas of nutrition were purged from the medical schools, and hence the physicians know very little about health, and so there's a disconnect between medicine and health. The goal of medicine is not to restore health anymore, just to manage symptoms of disease.
And what I wanted to go into is a little bit of the history, because you've done such a phenomenal job with your research here. And I wanted to go into Hippocrates, because Hippocrates was considered and is considered by medicine, many people, as the father of medicine. And you said that there was another individual that was very, very significant in affecting medicine. Actually, it's a series of individuals. And I know Francis Bacon, you have a great deal of respect for. But I thought, let's talk about Hippocrates, because this is a man that, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, here he is, he's stating things of the relativeness of, one, do no harm. As a physician, you do no harm. You really be thoughtful here. So let's go into some of the research you found about Hippocrates.
Okay. Hippocrates was actually the father of science, as well as the father of medicine. Back in those days, science and medicine were closely associated. In fact, medical science came into existence before the physical sciences, because when men were particularly interested in diseases and staying healthy and so on. Well, Hippocrates discovered that you must look at all of the facts concerning a person's lifestyle in order to arrive at what is causing him to be sick. And he followed what we call the empirical method of inquiry, that is, by experience, by looking at the facts of nature, the facts of the disease, the symptoms in the human body. Then by collecting all the facts together, you can arrive at a solution by reasoning. That is the secret of empirical science, and he first introduced it into medicine. And he came up with a formula that in order to cure a disease, you need to have the person eat the right foods and the right nutrition, and that will then reverse the metabolic dysfunction that is occurring in his body. He then said drugs never cure, because the priestcraft and the physicians were tied in together back then, and they used drugs for dramatic effect, for religious effect too. And they even back then tried to mask the symptoms by the use of drugs. Well, Hippocrates, he started a school of medicine to teach doctors, and he told his graduates, you must never ever use drugs to mask the symptoms. You must always try to determine the cause of the disease. And since that time, there's been virtually two schools of medicine that's handed that down to us for 2,500 years, nutritional medicine and drug medicine. Hippocrates championed nutritional medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Conclusions of my book, or not conclusions, so much what I demonstrate in my book, by reviewing 2,500 years of medicine and science, I showed that there was a healthy competition between nutritional medicine and drug medicine for 2,500 years. And it wasn't until the last 100 years when the high finance and the pharmaceutical industry teamed up with bigger government to enforce drug medicine that nutritional medicine was eclipsed. And it still is eclipsed today. But there have been times and periods in which nutritional medicine was more fashionable and respected than drug medication throughout this 2,500-year period of competition.
There was a gentleman, he was the chair of medicine, of the history of medicine at the University of Leipzig. His name was Henry E. Fagerich, and I may not be pronouncing it exactly correctly. And he also was with John Hopkins University, and he was involved in the study of medicine and history from 1932. And he and his research said that Hippocrates' philosophy of medicine basically advocated the power of healthful foods to heal diseases.
That's right.
I was really impressed with this quote that you give from him. And the quote by this gentleman was, "Nature heals. The doctor's task consists in strengthening the natural healing powers to direct them, and especially not to interfere with them. The dietetic treatment is the best. Through the food, the power regenerates itself. Hippocratic dietetics reached a level that to our day merits our great admiration." And you think of this, and there are so many people today, because we have a wonderful communication capacity through the written word, through the internet, through some people that have managed to get onto good television shows, saying we must understand this. Now, this has been advocated by a lot of people for a lot of years, but they have been silenced. And so much relates to the diet. So much relates to emotional nature. And his theory, Hippocrates, wanted the practicing physicians to look at the whole person. And I can't tell you how many times through the years I have listened to the stories of people when they go in to see physicians. Physicians only have on average 10 to 15 minutes. 15 minutes is really a lot of time.
Yeah.
And this is in Western countries. And I feel sorry for a good physician that really cares, because to spend time with a patient, it is going to reward the physician if they're a good listener, because it will enable them to get to whatever the base is of what is going on. Because sometimes it's stress, sometimes it's grief, sometimes
yes.
there's all kinds of things, plus poor habits, maybe in nutrition. But it's looking at the person as a whole individual, not as a segmented piece of a microscopic study, because everything is related. And
that,
this is one of the things that I find throughout your book, that you bring out in great detail.
Yes, Donna, you are right in holding that the physicians should spend more time. But what is even more important than that is the worldview or the mindset of the physician. He will make no sense of the facts he gets from his patient unless he has the right worldview. And this is one of the highlights of my book. You mentioned that nature heals. That is one of the dividing characteristics between nutritional medicine and pharmaceutical medicine. Those physicians that believe that nature heals sees the role of medicine to be assisting the body to heal itself. And it is primarily done through nutritional modalities and lifestyle changes. Most pharmaceutical doctors do not, if they think about it, do not believe that nature heals. But nature, the body must be chemically manipulated to suppress the symptoms of disease. And so if a physician spends a long time with the patient and he believes that the body cannot heal itself, he will naturally turn to, okay, what is she telling me or he telling me, and what drugs can I use to suppress the symptoms, whether it's depression or any chronic diseases that are being manifested here? Do you see how it's your worldview that turns you in one direction or the other?
Now, yes, it is.
And in addition to this, another dividing line between nutritional medicine and pharmaceutical medicine is a concept that Pythagoras and Plato presented to the world that became an effective parry to Hippocratic medicine, and that is that the cause of disease was matter. Matter was evil. The earth, matter, causes diseases. What they did was they externalized evil, and they began to see matter as causing people to behave evil. And they, because they were in the evolutionary model, they were affected by the environment. Well, this idea went into medicine. The physicians in the time of Plato began to see that, it is disease, it's the germ, it's the bacteria that causes the disease. Whereas Hippocrates would say it was the disease condition, the metabolic dysfunction that caused the germ to be active. And the Pythagorean and Platonic physicians began to say, no, it was the germ that caused the dysfunction of the body. It was two totally opposing worldviews. Consequently, the physicians who followed Pythagoras began to see, yes, we need to identify invent drugs that can shoot down the external evil, the germ, the bacteria, and that gave an impetus to drug medication, and it has been the basis of drug medication ever since, that it is the germ that causes the disease, therefore you attack the germ.
In your book, you have a very powerful segment that talks about the case for medical freedom in the Bill of Rights.
Yes.
And one of the disturbing patterns that has been around for a long, long time is the attitude that whatever the government says, that's what you're supposed to adopt. Well, to me, it's always been funny because whoever is in the position of authority, we're talking about people, the
yes.
government is not some mystical entity living up on Olympus in a bunch of purple clouds. It is a body of human beings that are making choices, and whether we agree with them or not, they have been put into that positioning, and they are not gods. Period.
Yes.
They're merely individuals. And most of them, in so many areas, are grossly ignorant. And when it comes to nutrition, there have been those few entities around, and one of them is the pharmaceutical industry at this time, that says, well, I will support you, but you've got to support me. I know more than you do. I'm obviously the expert, quote-unquote, pharmaceutical industry.
Yes.
And so this is what happens. And the reality is that ideas are adopted until all of a sudden the mass populace says, I'm sorry, but this isn't working.
Yes.
And that is why so many people have been turning to alternative therapies. Now, some people are catching up with this, they're recognizing this, and they're introducing it into their package. I happened to see an ad on television just last night, and I've seen it before, where there is a cancer center, and they say, we want to treat the whole person. And this is the modality that they're promoting. And they say, you have a choice when you come to us. We'll use alternative things if you want. Basically, this is what was being conveyed, and I thought, aha, somebody has figured out their package so that it's going to appeal to the mentality of this massive amount of population that is saying what has been promoted is not working. I've got to find something different. And so this little by little is becoming incorporated. And you bring out such powerful, powerful stories in your book about medical freedom, which a lot of people don't have. They go into the hospital, you'll sign all your rights away, and they will say in there, in that contract, you do not have choice about the treatment that you're getting.
Yes. You know, Donna, you touch on so many interesting facts and points, and we don't have time, obviously, to touch on all of them. But I would just mention a few briefly, and that is, it was Henry VIII who passed the Statute of Quacks. The pharmaceutical doctors were trying to get him to outlaw nutritional medicine, and he says, no, the women in the countryside, those old wives' hair with their old wives' tails were healing more people than you drug doctors, so I'm going to pass a law that says there is medical freedom in this country. People can choose which type of medicine they would like to practice. I wish that were adopted in America. Benjamin Rush signed up the Declaration of Independence and the general medical surgeon of Washington's army. He tried to get that into the First Amendment, but failed. If that were adopted today, we would have medical freedom in America. The problem with government endorsing one type of medicine is that if it happens to endorse the wrong science and the wrong medical science, then we don't have medical freedom. We have an elite enforcing, with the help of big government, enforcing a therapeutic that is harmful to the public. And that's exactly what we are seeing today. Big government, in alliance with the pharmaceutical industry, is enforcing drug medication just to manage the symptoms of diseases and doing everything to put obstacles in the way of nutritional medicine, and even to the point of denying people the free access to alternative therapy.
You go into the history of homeopathy, the fact that science cannot disprove it, cannot disprove its value. You go into the history of the AMA, the political battles that are going on today. Your book, Whisper of the Serpent, is power-packed. I mean, you really have done an incredible job, and anyone that would have the interest to read it would find that there is so much in it that is really quite thought-provoking. And the word disruptive to commonplace thinking is a very appropriate word to use, because it sort of shakes one out of, oh, I thought this is the way it was. And, of course, I'm a strong advocate of that. That doesn't bother me. I think it's very healthy. I think it's important that we challenge. I think it's important we ask questions. I think that we need to understand that we can combine different things, different therapies, different wisdoms, different levels of knowledge, and they can work in harmony. Because what we really want is the wellness of the individual to be paramount in mind, body, and spirit. And that is what I really think medicine is all about. But of course, that's not going to be the popularly held opinion on the part of many professionals. But those doctors and nurses and medical individuals that I've come to know that really love their work and really have a passion for making a difference, they feel that way. And they, in their own way, are trying to make a difference and often are experiencing and working in modalities that in a million years they would never have thought they would have evolved into. James Henderson, your book, Whisper of the Serpent, is quite an eye-opener. And I think that anyone that would like to be challenged, that enjoys through the aspect of logic to be challenged, it's very good. For someone who is wanting to feel, understand, have that positioning, it's going to work too. So
thank
I
you.
Think
which,
that
it's Amazon, and it's available on Amazon.com.
Mm-hmm. Also, check out his website, James C. Henderson, and that is C like Charles Henderson, HENDERSON.com. And you'll find all kinds of information on his website and also some of the other books that he's put out. But this one, Whisper of the Serpent, don't be afraid to pick it up because it'll be something that'll really open your eyes to aspects of history, how it changed, why it changed, and different faces of the world of medicine that often we don't ever have a chance to view. James Henderson, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, and you're welcome, and you did an excellent job summarizing my book.
Thank you, sir. It's my pleasure. James Henderson, jamesc.henderson.com. Check it out. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I'm so delighted that you're able to join me today, and I am so delighted that I have the privilege, and I use that word sincerely, of being able to connect with people that are able to do what I wouldn't be able to do. I mean, I don't think I'd have the patience to go through the volumes of specific materials as James Henderson did. And again, his book, Whisper of the Serpent, is just, it's amazing, an amazing book. Well, I want to say thank you again to all of you, and phone lines are open, telephone number to call into if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you want to get a reading from me, I am available. All you need to do is call in. I just want your first name or your initial, and of course, I love to know what you're calling in from. What country, what state, doesn't make any difference. And then I will give you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. Now, by the way, for those of you who are listening from Southern California, I want to let you know I am going to be traveling to the Golden State on February the 4th. I have an appearance there. I am going to be available for private readings in person and also by phone. And you can just call my office. I'm going to be in Southern California from the 4th of February through the 9th of February. And again, I will have details and information up on my newsletter. And if you want to set up a time with me while I'm in your area, which is going to be Santa Barbara, I will also be in Los Angeles, Glendale, Burbank. So those four areas I'm going to be located in, and you can call me at my office, 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Well, I wanted to share a little bit of a paranormal story, as it might be described. And this is about a man that disappeared. And they just never had an answer to this disappearance. We're talking about a man by the name of Benjamin Bathurst. Now, we're going to travel back to the 1800s. It was the 25th of November. Benjamin was the secret British envoy to the Royal Court of Austria, and he was traveling incognito. Aha, he was then a form of what we would call the Bond image, James Bond. Well, he was traveling as a wealthy merchant, and he went out into the street while his coach was being prepared so that he could travel to where he wanted to go. He walked around the front of the horses and vanished. Just poof. He was gone. No one ever saw him again. Now, what was going on at the time? Well, Napoleon Bonaparte was conquering Europe with military force. Bathurst was deeply involved in diplomatic espionage, and he was trying to gather together those allies that were going to oppose the self-crowned French emperor. Now, this man usually carried two pistols with him. His valet and secretary were armed, and there were guns stashed in his carriage in case of attack. Now, when he arrived in Perlberg, Austria, he went to a local garrison and asked for the armed guards before entering the White Swan Inn for something to eat. Now, he was very, very noticeable because he was wearing a sable overcoat. Not a lot of people could wear something like that. It had violet velvet lining. This guy was pretty classy. And a large diamond stick pin. Now, there was a woman guest at the end that said he was very, very nervous, unable to drink his tea without his hands shaking. The man was scared to now, lanterns at that time were the only means of light, especially at night, and they had been lit when he left the White Swan Inn. And the hostler was finishing up with the horses, and the valet was loading luggage at the rear of the coach. The secretary was standing in the inn doorway, and soldiers were stationed at the end of the street. Bathurst, they saw him walking around the head of the horses, and then, poof, he was gone. He disappeared. The valet and secretary saw only each other as they circled the carriage. The secretary swore that Bathurst did not return to the inn, and the soldiers, no one had passed them. Austria? Well, in Perlberg, Austria, they searched everywhere. They couldn't find a trace of the man. Period. A mystery that has never, ever been solved. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-627-6008 is the telephone number that you can call into. I want to let you know about the other guests that I have this week coming on. Mentoring the NDE survivor, the near-death experience. When I got this material, I thought, who would need to mentor a near-death survivor? I've talked to a number of people through the years. It was never anything that was traumatic for them. It usually is quite a life-changing experience for individuals. But Carolyn Matthews found that there were people that did need mentoring because the experience was confusing to them. So we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. And then Julia Shopik. This woman is a woman of not just courage, but of absolute determination, diligence, and resilience. This is a woman that's put together a book called Honest Medicine because she was able to help her husband, who suffered seriously from a major brain tumor, and where he was supposed to die, she said, no, there has to be a better way of treatment. He lived for a number of years. We'll hear more of the story on Thursday. And then Cue Cards for Life, Christina Steinworth. She's going to be on with me on Friday, and I think we're going to have a good time with Christina. What are those cue cards? Well, you'll have to tune in and find out. All of these good people are making a difference in life. Why? Because they have a purpose. They feel that they must really speak up and speak out so that someone, somewhere, is going to be empowered with the knowledge and information that they've acquired. Now, one of the great things about this is, if it creates a challenge in your thinking, that's healthy. We need to be open to change. We need to be open to being aware of personal responsibility for ourselves, because it's up to us. You know, we're the only ones in our physical chassis. We're the ones that do the thinking. We're the ones that can create the chaos, or we can create the wellness. What are we going to do? And there are many, many different ways of doing it. And that's what I like to think that we're able to do with this show. Deal with the mind-body-spirit connection, the emotional connection, realizing that we have this phenomenal experience called life that we are living, and that we are going to have these various challenges, and how can we leverage them so they work for us, not against us. And that is the challenge that we've got. Speaking of having things work for us and not against us, well, one of the things that with technology that has evolved that has been very, very strong and it's impacting our lives and our pocketbooks is fraud. And there are so many different ways of it being done anymore. We're all familiar with the con artists and the pee underneath the walnut shelves and taking people's money because there's a particular way of doing something. Gambling, we're all aware of this. But there have been so many new adaptations for a scam. And one of them, and of course it's related to technology, is through social media. And a statement was made that Facebook and other social networks are fertile grounds for fakery. Wow. How many times are people being made aware of this daily? Whoa, I don't know that I could even count it. Now, let's talk about social networks for a moment. There are news fed messages from Facebook friends that will talk about an app that claims to let you see who's checking out your profile. However, some of these messages can be spam in disguise, leading to what they call bait pages when you're asked to like the app, which forwards the spam to all of your friends. Then you complete a survey. Now, the survey collects personal information and opinions. What it is, the objective of this survey is to trick you into filing surveys for online advertisers, because the person who set up the operation is collecting commissions for everyone that's completed. Now, who's putting out this information regarding this particular scam? Chet Winitsky, who is a senior security advisor at Sophos, which is an information security firm, says this is what you need to be aware of. They said there's a difference between scam surveys and legitimate surveys. Legitimate surveys link you directly to the questionnaire. You don't need to hit like first, and your responses are confidential. They are not used for marketing or fundraising. So this is what Chet recommended. He said, don't reveal personal information online to anyone who initiated contact with you unless your trust is certain. Look for the survey company's name and go to its website independently by reopening your browser or call the company. Ignore product promos from Facebook friends. Use caution in granting access to your profile and think before you like. Just a little bit of wisdom there that I wanted to share with you. Donna Sebo here. Telephone lines are open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. We're going to be right back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. We've got a caller on the line, and if you'd like to chat with me today, 888-627-6008. And don't forget, those of you in Southern California, I am going to be in a neighborhood there, Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, Glendale, Burbank. So give me a buzz if you would like to meet with me or talk with me on the phone. My number is 253-582-5604 to schedule that connection. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
My name is Linda, and I'm calling in from Auburn, California.
Auburn. Oh, my goodness. You know, I know some people in Auburn, California, and I always have to chuckle because when they call me, I have to watch it if I'm sending any material to them because we have Auburn, Washington. So I always have to make sure that I get my Auburns in the right state. Anyway, let's get down to business with you, Linda. First thing I'm looking at is, number one, I want you to give yourself credit for the obstacles that you have been able to climb over. And the image I'm getting are these massive boulders that seem to be somewhat smooth, and they're representing some big obstacles that you have had to crawl over. You couldn't move them. You had to figure out how you were going to get around them to get past them. And you've been able to do that. You need to pat yourself on the back because you really feel as if you have reached a point and there seems to be something that seems to be quite sizable that's in front of you that's looming and you just are getting so discouraged. And I want to say, don't be discouraged. The reason you have for the last 2.5 to 4 years gone through this is for some reason, and I don't know why, you have not felt worthy, and so you have put yourself into, on a subconscious basis, not on a conscious basis, an obstacle course. You're just about finished. You are not to give up, because what is right in front of you that seems to be absolutely huge, when you look at this massive boulder, as I am in my mind, I'm seeing you taking a piece of dynamite and blowing the rock to the moon. So you don't need to try to push, pull, drag. You don't need to do that. You just need to look at what's in front of you and determine the dynamite that you're going to use to blow it to smithereens. So it is actually going to be dissipated. This year, you are faced with some very significant decisions. It will affect those that are close to you because it may be a series of decisions, because I'm getting the plural, a series of decisions that are really going to require you to change certain patterns. And it is going to upset some people. It is going to create a level of criticism on their part. And you need to be honorable for yourself and what you know you need to do and allow them to handle their stuff, because apparently there are many individuals around you, whether they're family, friends, working associates, that are dependent on you. And they want you to stay consistently the same because they know that you are going to then perhaps rescue them or provide them a safe haven where they need to do this for themselves. So you're coming into your own, Linda. You're coming into your own. You've traveled a very, very difficult road. You're a very caring person. But you are at this particular positioning right now because you are becoming alert to the fact that it is your thinking and the actions that follow your decisions that are going to create a tremendous disruption. And so the obstacles, or obstacle, the major one that I'm seeing in front of you at this point, is going to be totally blown apart. But it's your choice, your decision. You are going to implement the action then that will blow this totally out of your space. Now, again, it's going to be disruptive. It's going to be very disruptive to those that are around you, but it'll be the right thing for you to do. What would you like to ask me today?
Thank you. I am making a decision on a move. I've temporarily been with friends for 3 months, and I have the option of assisting during a work exchange program at a meditation center up here, or I've been exploring options of, like, senior housing and doing some of my classwork with women. So I'm just looking at making a decision which direction to go.
Well, I would explore both options. The first option that you mentioned is going to be temporary, because you are not going to want to stay in that capsuled environment for that long a period. The second option is something that you're going to explore, and you're going to realize that it has its positive points as well as its not so positive points. The breakthrough that I'm looking at, the big boulder, is I think you're going to come to an assessment that may integrate both of these that you are looking at, plus a determination of what you want after a year's time. So I think you're seeing parts of the bigger picture, but you're not stuck. You are not limited. You are evaluating right now. And sometimes you have to be still to make a good evaluation. If you're buzzing around all the time and you've got this and that flitting through your head and you're sort of like a busy bee, you're not going to be able to concentrate and have the clarity to see what the bigger picture is, which involves financial independence, flexibility, and being able to utilize the skills that you have. So be patient with where you are. You are coming to that point where you know you can have your cake and eat it too, but it is going to require a major change in your life. So you're not in a bad space. It's challenging because it's different, but you don't need to be afraid. You've got both your feet on the ground. Your head once in a while might be in the clouds, but you're well grounded. I'm not concerned about you. I just want you to be okay with where you are for right now and work through questions, examine, and look at what options you do have available to yourself. Brainstorm with some people that you know Mm-hmm. See, I just like, if you were in a situation XYZ, what would you do? And I think you're going to have the answers. Linda, I'm almost out of time. I'm going to have to go, my dear.
Thank you so much, Donna.
You're very welcome, Linda. Thank you for being a part of the show. Be sure and tell your friends.
I am, yes. Thank you.
Have a blessed day, my dear. This is Donna Siebel. I'm so delighted that you've been with me today. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. There's so much in life that is out there to be explored. And even if economically you don't feel like you have a lot of money, go to your library, volunteer, be involved in something, get yourself out of your apartment, your house, whatever. Put yourself into some new environments that allow you to see things through different eyes. It's going to open up your world, and you're going to find that there is so much you don't know. And that should be exciting to you. It really should be. I know it is to me, because there is so much more we can learn. And you know what? You're never going to know it all. Woohoo! That gives you an opportunity for an exciting life. This is Donna Siebel. I'll chat with you tomorrow, same time, same place. God bless. Have a wonderful, wonderful day or evening wherever you are on this wonderful planet we call Earth. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.